Blog Talk Radio.
Man's voice. Here we are on Sunday, November the 12th, and some of you might be having cold weather, or it's getting chillier. So glad to end with having some. I think somebody is having moving things around, or getting some feedback from somewhere. But we've had lots of comments from last week's show. But the thing that was seemed to be the most prominent piece is our discussion on guns in churches. That seems to have struck a nerve with a lot of people because there was a couple of people that brought up the fact that the panel obviously doesn't know the Ten Commandments. And we somehow are not looking at the Fourth and the Sixth Commandment. On Fourth Amendment is to remember to keep holy the Sabbath day, and the Sixth is you shall not kill. But we said that we didn't say, but there were people, and there were people that I wish Don was on, because he was adamant about we should have guns, there should be people having guns in church. So the question that I'm getting from a lot of listeners is, how do we justify having guns in church when the commandments, or God, the supreme one, says, thou shalt not kill and thou shalt keep holy the Sabbath? How can a minister then say, well, we need to have guns in church? I think it's a kind of an oxymoron, but I want to throw that out there to someone to pick up. Why, Bruce? What do you think about that conversation?
Well, I'm not one that would carry a weapon in the church. I don't. For me personally, it doesn't fit. No matter what church I enter, however. I can understand people being extremely worried, concerned. A weapon in church just doesn't feel right, but I'm not under the circumstances some of these other people are, and in areas where they feel they need to, they see it as a deterrent. It doesn't necessarily mean someone's going to get killed, but it does mean that potential is there. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you well. So you're saying you don't believe that there should be guards or something at a church with a loaded weapon?
Well, I would never say never anywhere, no way. I'm always sensitive to the idea that there may be some areas that are warrant someone at the door to kind of observe. That doesn't make the church any more welcome. That's just they're trying to make sure that it is a safe environment inside the church to do what a church wants to do and needs to do.
And the comment I'm getting back from our listeners is, but aren't you then not following God's commandments, the Fourth and Sixth Commandments? Because you're saying have a gun, and if you need to use it, Fourth Commandment says, keep holy the Sabbath day, which means no guns. The sixth,
no,
of course, thou shalt not kill.
You asked me outside, kind of like a guard, and just because someone has a gun doesn't automatically mean they're gonna kill somebody. I see it more as if you have the right a person that really knows how to handle it and felt in a particular church, in a particular area, under a particular situation, needed to have that security outside, I don't see a problem with it. And that's not breaking any commandments at all.
Okay. It would kind of infringe on keep holy the Sabbath day, because you're asking somebody to be prepared to kill somebody.
Well, No, that's not it either, David. Someone could bring some other kind of weapon to a church, and that would apply as well. I mean, if you're saying any sort of a weapon at all should violates that, someone that is, and I don't mean this to be funny because it's not funny. I've seen pros at this. Someone with a capability of using a pro slingshot could kill somebody.
Yes. I'm not saying I agree or disagree with you at all. I'm just saying that these were the comments I got last week. I got a bunch of comments
about
what we discussed.
And
I wish Don was here because Don was the one that adamantly he is in church all the time, but he thinks we should be protected. I know that Frank is in church a lot too. Frank, what were your comments on this?
Well, I agree with the caller. It's ludicrous to believe that you have a holy institution when you have people that are armed with weapons inside the church, even though it might be to protect the citizens in there. So, you know, I have a police chief that goes to the church that I go to. The only occasion where I've seen someone outwardly having a weapon has been on Christmas Eve, and one of the young 20-some-year-old police officers comes into the midnight mass and generally sees his relatives and hugs them out in the foyer, the commons area. I'm not in the worship area. And I've seen him for a couple Christmases. And he is, to me, and I'm just giving it from my perspective, he is acceptable. But I'm very, very, very uncomfortable in any situation. A professed good guy or a professed bad guy, I'm very uncomfortable with people that have weapons at any location at any time, and I'm from the military. I have seen people, including myself, who can be negligent with a weapon in any given moment, which is easy to do and can cause catastrophic consequences. I've seen that with military people. I've seen that with police officers. And I just think that our society and time that we live in a culture of death. And we think that the gun is substitute for Jesus Christ or the Lord and Savior. And that just the two of them do not go together.
Great. Just for the panel's sake, I want to tell you how deep this conversation was. There was several people that contacted me by emails and things like that, and the conversation got to, if God knows that people are going to die, if God knows all, how do you know that he knows that's going to happen? So why are we trying to stop it? That was mind-boggling for me because I didn't have an answer for that. Jeremiah, answer that question to the best of which you can, however you answer it.
I was saying, okay, let's not try and stop all the crime. Let's not try and stop terrorism. Let's not try and stop anything that directly harms or kills someone. That sounds ridiculous.
Mm.
I mean, if people feel uncomfortable, another scenario would be the person feels uncomfortable with an armed member of the church being inside the church with everyone. Okay, that's if everyone comes to agreement to pay for an armed police officer or two or three police officers at the entrance of the church, that would be likable. But who wants to go to church thinking like, hey, this could be my day to die? That would be the last place you would want to go and think that something catastrophic would happen to you.
Well, that isn't true. People at church profess to believe in heaven and believe in God, but the problem is it seems like everybody says they believe in that, but they don't want to go to heaven.
Why do you say they don't want to go to heaven?
Well, the facts are is that we go to church and we're preparing ourselves to go to heaven, but nobody wants to go right now.
Oh, right.
That's, I mean, that's we all think
that's
of
the
it
purpose of church.
We all think of heaven being at the end of life, not just when someone wants to come and take your life.
Well, and when someone takes your life, that is the end of life. When somebody takes your life, that is the end of life.
Okay. And we also just go sign up to be in the Marines and just allocate ourselves to war. Just die all, die now.
Well, let me just say this right here. A weapon is not a natural thing. It doesn't. God doesn't give that to you when he births you. Okay, so that's something we've adopted, like in our society, and somehow we've risen that weapon up, money, weapon, to be on the same level as Jesus Christ. That's all I'm saying. Okay, there's no way that I'm going to show up at a church knowing that people in that church are armed. I have been in a church in New Mexico, the first time I've ever saw people literally wearing guns working inside the church, and I kind of got an explanation for that, and that's because, you know, these churches sit out on desert with no surrounding buildings or anything, so people can come in and rob the church, you know, and take off, and go, you know, 20 miles to the next place. But that's the only time I'd ever observed armed police officers sitting inside the church. I have been at meetings, and we're doing a Muslim Jewish thing, and there have been police officers out in the parking lot area, the entryway, as we're coming in. Didn't have a problem with that. But to be inside a place that's considered the worship center, a place that is considered to be a holy area for tabernacle, I'll just won't go to church.
I don't know, man. I think there's a lot of things that we do that are not consistent. But I won't tell anyone, don't go to church if they're not trying to save your own life. That doesn't make sense. But I just think that we do so many other things that are not right.
How do you
save this one? Would be.
And by the way, how do you save your life by carrying a gun to church? You can go ahead and continue, but when you get a chance, answer that one for me.
How does the police officer save his life when he carries a gun and someone attacks him with a weapon? I look at it the same way. Even though the citizen or the churchgoer is not on duty, working, but at the same time, just like you have the right to protect yourself, regardless of where you are. I mean, you're not going to church for that, but we know we have sick people in this world that target the innocent. That's just like, there's no excuse for raping a child, no excuse for raping an elderly person, but it happened. So whatever young lady tells you at 90 years old, I have a taser just in case this guy tries and rape me, we're just going to tell her, well, you're too old to have a taser. Why are you thinking like that? Shit happens.
All right, let me jump in for a second. John, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think there should have been an 11th commandment that thou shalt not be unprepared and be a sheep. I mean, what we're doing here is, you know, we're basically, you know, assuming that everybody's going to follow, you know, the Ten Commandments. And we know that that is not the case throughout the world. So, you know, when you take a look at the Bible, read the Bible, there's also some, you know, verses in there that say an eye for an eye and do unto others. So, you know, I don't think that, you know, being able to be prepared and to protect yourself and to save yourself from a maniac, I don't think that's being ungodlike at all. I mean, I think, you know, it's the fight for survival. And, you know, I mean, it doesn't make any sense why you would want to be unprepared and not be able to protect yourself. I mean, the shooting at the church was stopped by a good guy, you know, with a gun. I mean, how many more people would that guy have killed that day if he wasn't confronted by the neighbor who ran down there barefoot and started, you know, and took three shots and you know, took care of the guy, and he fled and ended up killing himself? I mean, you know, you can't tell me that that guy who went in there was a Christian or a God-fearing person when in the end he did the ultimate sin of killing himself. So, You know, I think being prepared, being able to protect yourself, I don't think there's an issue with that. I don't think, you know, trying to protect yourself, breaking any type of commandments makes you any less a religious person than somebody who doesn't.
All right. Go ahead, Frank.
I would like to point out two things with the last conversation. One is that the eye for an eye is the Old Testament. I don't know very many religions that are involved with following the Old Testament. The new law was put out by Jesus Christ, so that's different, and it's not the eye for an eye. The other thing is the shooter in Texas. My understanding is, you know, and not being cruel, because every life is important, but the shooter was outside the building. And so there's an assumption that he had finished his whatever bad work he was doing inside the building and was in the departure stage. And so he was shot outside the building, my understanding is, and the guy pursued him outside the building. But they didn't come in and interact with each other inside the worship center.
Okay, so let's say he doesn't think anybody else is alive, and he decides to drive down to another church 15 miles away and do the same thing.
More lies.
Well, that's I heard that assumption from the president, which I thought was kind of unusual, that this hero, the one that shot this guy, he saved us from this guy killing 100 more people. I don't know how the president would come up with that type of number of people that were saved. You know, I got a feeling that guy wanted to get his mother-in-law, that group of people, and that that shooter may have very well saved that guy from driving back to their home and killing them. But I don't think he was after 100 other people. All right.
And
so,
we'll never know.
There's large churches out here, buddy.
Well, the president thinks he saved 100 people. I just don't think that's even close to being accurate. But
my Catholic church has over 100 people.
Well, you're missing what I'm saying. I'm trying to say the killer was going to kill those 50 people and then go someplace else and kill another 100 people. That's what John and I were talking
one thing,
about.
Okay, a killer has never done that before, but what if this guy's like, okay, I'm going to be different? As things go along and years pass and we have all these shootings, I mean, who knows? Somebody wants to be different. Somebody want to go out with a bigger bang than the last person.
Yeah,
exactly.
I think, guys, I think that although the president could have chosen other words, I think it was more giving the message of magnitude that, look, we don't know what this guy, this crazy person might have done. He might have gone to another church that had several hundred. My church had 300-400 in it in any one time. And or he may have gone to some other area where there's a large gathering of people and continued his rampage. I think that's what he was saying. Look, we stopped someone that could have done a lot more significant harm to the public and killed a large number of people. Saying 100 people, yeah. I mean, he doesn't know that. You're right. But I think it's the magnitude is what he was trying to stress.
I agree.
Well,
okay,
yeah,
guys, let me jump in here for a second. Let me jump in because there was more to this conversation. These people that were fussing at me. One of the things that one thing that came out is they said that this panel was more hypocritical because this panel kind of said that it believed that there should be less guns, that we should do something to help keep guns. It was kind of 50-50. But one of the people that was talking to me said, if we're saying that we need to give people guns, churches and things, aren't we saying we're putting more guns on the street? But I thought that the panel, some of the members of the panel were saying that they didn't want more guns and we should do something to get guns off the street. So our ideology of putting guns in churches means that we believe that we're actually putting more guns on the street. How do you defend that, Bruce? Defend that, because
you lost me a little bit. Can you make your statement a little more concise and the point you were making, David?
Sure. There was a question about us saying that we should have guards and security guards at churches to protect people. And then at one of the other meetings, shows that we had, we were talking about taking this off the street. And it was like 50-50, I think, on how to do that. But the person that I was talking to me said, when we say that we are wanting to put more guns in churches and security guards and stuff, aren't we adding more guns to the street?
Well, I don't know. I defend it this way. I don't know that you're creating more guns on the street. There's plenty out there right now, and whether a qualified guard, wherever he or she may be, is standing in front of a church or in front of a library or city hall, I don't think that necessarily increases the amount of guns. I think, but I agree with both sides of the argument about guns out and about, because if we take the fear factor out to the nth degree, then we basically say every single person should be armed wherever they go, because you can be hurt wherever you go, and that's crazy. I'm not going to do it, and I think most Americans don't want to do it, but that's where that line of thinking goes. So I think the reason we're getting more and more about the fear of guns or having guns or not having guns is there's ramped up fear right now. There's fear everywhere. People are afraid of each other. They're afraid of situations. They're afraid of groups. They're afraid of concerts. They're scared. And some people feel the only way they can handle fear is to protect themselves.
Right. All right, let's change the subject a little bit. Let's move to other things. One other thing that I want to say, and then I want to open it up for the panel to come up with things that they might, but I wanted to talk about this subject because we all have people that have sons. We know that we have sons and nephews, grandsons, and this recent political report on Aaron Hernandez, the gentleman who himself in jail after he was a star, NBA, NFL star, and he ended up shooting somebody and killing somebody and hung himself in jail. Then last week it came out that he had suffered from the most severe CTE ever found in a person of his age, and it all came from football. CTE is the chronic traumatic encephalitis, if I can say. But so playing football, I'm seeing a lot of coming out from the press now saying playing football is very dangerous. And so does that mean that we should keep our sons and now daughters who are jumping into football away from this sport? And we do know, well, there are other sports. There's boxing that does the same thing, I think. But are we now that because I can imagine a lot of mothers seeing this and now won't let their sons play football. What are dads thought? What are men thinking about this? What do you think about this? What do you think about this, John?
Well, I don't have kids, but I think, you know, I mean, I played hockey, and let me tell you something. You can play all the football you want, but you don't know what pain is until you've had a stick come across your teeth and knock two or three of your teeth out, or get, you know, checked into a wall at 30 miles an hour and the wall doesn't move. Now, that's serious pain. That's what hurts. But I think what the NFL could do in the high school, and it's got to start at the local levels. I mean, flag football in high school, they've got to stop teaching these kids, to lead with their head when they're tackling these guys. And I think that's where a lot of this head-to-head contact stuff comes from. I think if you teach the proper techniques of tackling and, you know, I mean, We never used to have this back in the days, you know, in the 50s and 60s when these guys were playing, where all they had were a leather, you know, cap they put on their head, no face guards or anything else. But it just seems like in the last, you know, 10, 15 years, we seem to be having all of these concussions and everything else. So either the athletes themselves are getting weaker, or they're putting more of their faith in their equipment, and they're being taught the wrong techniques of tackling somebody.
All right. What do you think, Jeremiah?
I think over the last couple of years, things have been programs for Optimus, which is for, like, you know, 10-year-old kids, 12-year-old kids, high school football. They've been implementing programs to implement better techniques of tackling and teaching kids the proper way. Because sometimes, you know, your coach is just like, get them down. No matter how it takes you to get them down, just get them to the point. It's a contact sport. I don't think we can eliminate the incorrect contact totally, because it's a contact sport. Also, I'd like to end this by saying, which I should have said first, was congratulations to those Miami Hurricanes on that big win against the Catholics of Notre Dame.
But the question is, what are you telling your mothers and sisters and aunts about their sons playing football, yay or nay?
I mean, I would say I like sports, but when it comes to being a child, I prefer academics. I mean, I don't mind football, but if you were to ask me, should their child play football? First, how is he academically? How is his grades? How is he performing in school?
Okay.
Before I care
okay.
about him performing on the field.
His grades are good. He's an A student, but he wants to play football. And right now, I'm looking
at the newspapers,
and they're all
saying, is he an upsized child? Is he a
yes.
good size? You know, a lot of kids are pretty small for their age as well.
Okay. Yes, he's a big guy, and he wants to block, and he wants to go out there and knock some people down. What are you
going to
tell me? Oh, hello.
Come on, let's put on some pads and get a helmet, but I want them to let them know what's the fundamentals of football, not just, yeah, you like the contract, but I want you to understand the contract.
Okay. So you think that the parents should be talking to their coaches or keeping an eye
yes,
on them?
Yes, the parent, yeah, parents should be heavily involved. You should be appear at a few practices. You should talk to your child, see what he knows about it. Because at the end of the day, football is one of those sports where your child goes to practice and he's never the same again. It's not like basketball. Okay, he broke an ankle, he broke his arm. It's a contact sport. So if you don't care, you're going to get some bad results. Possibly.
Okay. Frank, you have grandsons. What if they want to play football, and we're getting all these reports that football is very dangerous. What do you think?
Well, first of all, David, I have adult children, and none of them played football. One's a boy, and he played soccer, okay? And the reason why he was steered towards soccer is because we knew at that time, and that's 30 or more years ago, that there were some issues. And I played football as a student, played football all my life. So we know that the head injuries from boxing, and I used to box, as well. And we know head injuries from boxing, and we know head injuries from football have catastrophic consequences. The last two weeks, I've been speaking with my son, who is a coach at a university, and what we were talking about is 11 people who got concussions, okay, and one of the sports teams. And so that's what our discussion was about. And this particular sport is a sport that's used quite often to teach football players on how to tackle. All right. It wasn't the males, it was women. But there's some issues in that on how do you prevent and reduce the concurrence of that happening. Because if you have a concussion, you can't go to class. You can't do your schoolwork. Your parents are paying money to send you to public school or private school. And so those you're kind of put on ice, and your development is delayed. And you can't play in the sports. And if you have a sport that doesn't have a large roster of people, then it's, you know, you could technically take your whole team out of the rest of the season. So I would not steer any child to play football or to box.
Okay.
If they went into it, like it was just said, I would hopefully work with them and tell them what the consequences could be, but more importantly, tell their parents, because I think their parents are the ones that are responsible for the development.
Right. All right, Bruce, you have a young grandson. What if he wants
yep.
to be a football star? What do you think?
Well, and my son played some football and other contact sports. I keep thinking, I tend to agree with some of what both others have said, that I don't think we should eliminate the sport, but I do think that better techniques to help diminish the head injury needs to happen. And if the focus is go out there and get them, well, then the coaches need to help the student understand that the skill of football isn't trying to crush somebody in the head or annihilate them. It's to end the play and tackle them and continue. The other thing that I don't hear much about, although I've done a little bit of research on it, is since the head injury, as I think Frank said earlier, can lead to so many other problems, there's a lot of technology out there now that could do a much better job of protecting our heads, our craniums of our youth. And I just don't get the feeling, if I was to talk to a teacher or a school system, show me what's going on that makes that injury safer or that contact of head-to-head safer than it was back when I was playing football. I don't get the sense that much of that is going on, do you?
No. I don't.
So
right.
I think it needs to be forced and to use some of that technology to help diminish head injuries.
All right. I want to open it up to panelists to talk. I'll have a couple other things, but I'll bring them in at the end. We have about 30 minutes left of the show. So I want to open it up to panelists and talk about something you might want to talk about. Jeremiah, do you have anything you want to discuss with the panel? Young guys, they have to think about it hard. Jeremiah, is he even there?
Can you repeat that? I didn't hear you.
No, I said the panel is open. Talk about anything you want to talk about. What would you like to talk about with the panel?
Oh, basically, I would just like to talk about those hurricanes. Of course, those hurricanes.
Team
pulled off
the
nice victory.
Oh, the team. Okay, never mind. Go ahead.
The team, yeah, football team, college football team. The Miami Hurricanes. Mark Richt, head coach. So basically, we've had a pretty good season. We've been doubted for so many games and all the whole year. But we finally knocked off Notre Dame. It was ranked number 3. We were ranked number 7. And I had a fantastic Saturday because of that situation. That's pretty
okay.
much it. Happy camper over here.
Wow. All right. What about you, John? You have any comments for the panel?
Well, I mean, there's a few things we could talk about. We could talk about a lot of Hollywood that came out against Trump and all these allegations of all these sexual bunch of crap. And now we got Kevin Spacey and Louis C.K. and George Takei all being kind of charged with the same thing. And it's actually, you know, more true that it's happening to them than, you know, Trump talking about it. You also got, you know, the one other thing, too, is that we're missing on this Texas thing is the Texas shooter is that, you know, the Air Force dropped the ball. You know, this guy had beat his wife, and he had been in a mental institute. He cracked his stepson's skull open. All of that stuff should have been reported to the local police and state police, and none of that stuff was turned over, and here he's able to walk in and legally carry a gun. So, you know, technically, he shouldn't have even had one. And so when you call for more gun control and, you know, you want more laws on that, here's a perfect example of why more laws wouldn't have worked, because the information that the military had wasn't given to the, you know, the states and the local police officers and agencies that allowed him to, you know, nothing was on his record. And then the other, probably the last thing is Trump being the first president to be admitted into the Forbidden City in China. I think that's pretty cool.
All right. But the gun piece, so the federal government wasn't able to get the information to the local government. So there's a seems to be a snap or a hang up between information filtering down. Did you say?
Hey David, that system hasn't ever worked. That system of being passed on to the federal government has never worked. It was special law enacted by Congress a few years back to try to make that happen, but it doesn't happen. In fact, the statistics on it, I think you quote every, the reporting on that was very minuscule. It was like 100,000 people and you got one report. So, and then you compare that with civil society, there's a lot higher reporting. So the military, all the services don't do it. Now, should they do it? Obviously, yes, but they haven't done it. And the problem also is about the characterization of the type of crime that you do in the military. That guy, if he had had a dishonorable discharge, then it would have gotten reported because dishonorable discharges are reported. But, quote, bad conduct, which is a better level, just a little bit better, they aren't necessarily reported unless, you know, and then they have to, that crime would have to fit the civilian corresponding crime. In this case, the crime that guy went and happened, he did a plea bargain, and so it didn't fit. It didn't exactly fit, but it still should have been reported. But they don't normally do reporting. That's the problem with that, the whole armed forces on that.
Wow. So do you think something's going to happen that, well, you said there were laws that passed, but they just don't do it. Is it that the federal government takes under superiority? We don't have to do unless we want to do it, kind of thing?
Well, I think some of the attitude is these folks came from the civil sector, so we didn't do anything to them, and we're sending them back home. I think that's part of the attitude, maybe. At least I shared in some of that attitude when I was on active duty. You know, that area is part of my area of expertise. So, like I said, if it had been this, I think what they're going to have to do is report all bad conduct, and that would be very helpful to the military. That way you don't have to do any big, heavy thinking if you would do dishonorable and bad conduct, and then keep the other provisions. And also, because you could have some less than honorable separations where the involvement of the individual, even though he agreed to something, a lesser charge, the basic involvement is, you know, the heavier charge. So that's one of the problems with getting that information to police. But I disagree with the fact that more laws, and I'm not looking for more laws on guns. I think that the issue is there's too many guns. Too many unnecessary guns. I believe that people should have the right to own guns, and particularly hunters and people who feel they need to protect themselves should have that right. But we have a proliferation of just too many guns, too many semi-automatic weapons, and, you know, and it's going to keep going to bazookas and other types of weapons like that. Pretty soon we'll be flying, you know, be drones that will be flying along, tagging people from, people will fly some drone out or some tank that will come out, that type of thing. So I think we just, and we're going to bring them in churches, so there won't be any more worshiping, because how can you worship, you know, with a gun?
You know, one of the things that last week that I found mind-boggling was the number of guns that have been taken out of schools. there was a young man in one of the states who dropped his backpack and he set off a gun, and the gun was in his backpack. And so they were doing the number of guns that are coming out of high schools, and I was surprised at the numbers. You know, when they went school by school, and they're like 30 and 40 guns per year, per school year, coming out of some of these schools. So, yeah, I think there are too many guns on the street if the kids in the high schools are walking around with them in their backpacks. But, Bruce, what's your thoughts on the subject?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. I have something. I got thinking about this. I keep hearing over and over again, security at airports or significantly secure areas, particularly airports, that the detection rate of weaponry and contraband, you know, things you're not supposed to have, is only like 10% successful. 90% of the things are not detected. Even if that isn't exactly right percentage-wise, it tells all of us that a huge percent are slipping by. And that's not being derogatory to the people that are in those positions right now, but here's a solution that I wonder if it could work. Why couldn't we use the military to be in those positions on a rotating basis for a small part of their time in the military? They get a better connection with the public. They're already being paid a salary. They will look at all of us in an entirely different way and mannerism as far as you checking into going onto an airplane. There's more interaction between the military and the public as far as hopefully making better, more comfortable relations, higher quality, more commitment. And I thought to myself, whether it's the National Guard or the different militaries, why couldn't we do that? Why couldn't we do that? Because the amount of pay that we give these people that are supposed to be in a very important position is minuscule. They're not getting paid much. And it scares me to death to think that a large number, if it's anywhere close to 50 or 60 or 70% of these things are passing right through and not being detected. Why couldn't we do it that way?
So you're wanting military at the airports and other places?
No, what I'm saying is take military personnel, not standing there in addition as guards at the gate with machine guns. I'm not saying that. I'm saying let the military people or the National Guard or the Reserve people that are trained for this to be in those positions for a certain amount of their stints in the service. They're already being paid. Let them be the inspectors.
Going to be in uniform doing this? They're going to be in uniform doing this?
Why not? I'm not afraid. I'm not concerned about that. I don't think that's going to – I think that would give a lot of people some comfort that knowing that they're there. And maybe some of them wouldn't be in uniform. That way, the, quote, bad guys have no idea who's looking at who when.
Well, first of all, you have to change the federal law. That's prohibited by federal law right now. That's a poppy kamikaze act. So that's prohibited from that happening. And the second thing is,
let's say though for a moment that it wasn't against the law, that it was allowed. What do you think of the idea?
I don't think military people join the armed forces to be airport guards. So they wouldn't be happy. Watchstanders that do that type of duties are not always happy either. People like to be in the field. They like to visit foreign countries. They like to do things that are heroic, just such as be in harm's way when they're called on by their nation. Some people in the military don't have a high regard for civilians, population, while they're in the military. Okay? And because what they do is they observe what's happening right now in our country, whether not right now, but in the past as well. They reserve those type of things, and they use some type of language that would be inappropriate. So they're not going to work very well with some movie actress or some corporate executive who doesn't follow the, you know, the procedures. That's why you don't put military in contact with civilians. That's why you put police officers and other types, because the military job is not to shoot to wound you, but it's to shoot to kill you. Okay, that's what we train to. That particular position, not to wound you. So I think public service or that united service where you have everybody serve their country, I think, yeah, that's a good thing in that type of capacity. But to put them in the armed forces, I don't think would have a good result.
Yeah, but I see rotating people in and out short term. Some of the military people may look at it like, yeah, maybe there's some cross training that needs to be done as far as sensitivity and talking to people. But wouldn't a soldier, a husband or wife, love to have maybe 4 or 5 months out of their military service where they get to stay home instead of ending up over in a war zone or so forth? I'll bet you money that they would love that.
I think that wouldn't work, because a person is assigned, and who's going to go in there and say, well, you live in this state, so you have to go to that airport in that state? I think it's bigger picture than that. I mean, in the military, once you get a training, you get assigned by where the need is.
Also, military comes home on leave. They go home to wherever.
Let me tell you why
it
wouldn't work. I joined the armed forces in 1964. At that time, we hadn't integrated in the United States as far as integration. So if I had been assigned to the South and somebody had called me the N-word, for instance, and I had a weapon, I would have plugged them. Okay? I would have plugged them. That's why I don't think that type of scenario works. Okay.
Okay.
All right. I would have plugged them and plugged anybody else that spoke up in their defense. Okay. At the same day, at the same time. So that's why we don't put the armed forces people with the civilian population, because in our country we had different states, different regions talk differently. I didn't even, let me just tell you, at that time in the military, I didn't even get close to a person who had a Southern accent. That was a repellent to me instead of an attraction. And I had much difficulty overcoming someone's regional way of expressing themselves. Okay? So we don't train for that. Okay?
There's a reckoning here. Almost every military person eventually comes out of the service. There are some that make it their life's career, and great that they do. But most retire from service. So why can't some kind of a connection with the regular public during that service wouldn't possibly make it a little easier when they get out of service? Because I got news for you. They all go back into the public after they're done with their stint or their time in the armed forces or whatever unit they're in. So why couldn't that possibly help?
Well, first of all, there's a law. The federal law prohibits military from being police people unless it's a state of emergency. And the reason for that is because the military could overthrow the government. Okay, so the military could overthrow the government, and that's the first reason why that doesn't happen. Okay, so we come in without guns. And we transport and do things like that, but we don't come in with weapons, because we could be like Sergeant Doe was in Africa, and a group of us could get together, because now we have weapons in hand. And we don't normally in the military in the United States walk around with weapons in our back pockets like civilians do. We don't walk around with, we don't drive around with them in our cars, and we don't drive around with our pockets, the large numbers like we do in our civilian population. Because if we did, we could overthrow the base, we could overthrow a government, city government, federal government, etc.
Well, I just think law wise, it may be prohibited right now, but laws can be changed, and acclimation of people can be done in a different way, because sooner or later, most of the military has to reacclimate to where they first started, back into the public. So I think there's a lot more pluses than minuses, and just saying, well, we can't do it because of the law, or can't do it because their attitude is going to be different. Well, I don't buy that. I just don't buy that. I think I'm not saying, Frank, that you have a much better perspective on military, that the attitudes don't mesh. I believe that. But those things can change. This is a way to make that change in a little better way.
Let me give you another scenario. When I was in Greece this year, when I was in Greece, I noticed the place that I was at, I noticed that there were about 150 military policemen. Okay, and that's an extraordinary number of people at this one base. When I was on active duty in the Navy, you might have found four people that were professional military police officers in the Navy. So the first thing I came up with is that if they have that many of them that on that base, they have issues. They have serious problems with people and weapons. And yes, they do have serious problems, because I actually spoke and walked with the commander for that police group, okay, which also told me that in Diego Garcia, they got like 650 people, all right? But the type of problems they have when they issue the weapons is people shooting themselves, people committing suicide, people accidentally shooting themselves, that type of problem, okay? So we have it in the armed forces when we have people with guns. You got to know that you're going to have a bigger issue in the civilian population when people are issued guns and weapons. All right, and the fact that I saw 150, I knew they had problems, because it's only been 20 years since I left, and in 20 years they could not build the type of culture that needs the professional culture that really needs. You know, to be how it should be, okay? You just can't do it in 20 years with that. So there you go. That's my input to it.
I'll make one more comment, and then I'll get off of it, because I've taken too much time. But I think a number of points you made, Frank, I agree with. But sooner or later, these people acclimate back into normal, as normal as possible, everyday life. So then let's put them at the tail end of their service, or at the beginning. I'm thinking more at the tail end. That maybe that's an easier way to ease them back into the public. I mean, I hear too many people coming up with too many excuses not to do anything that we don't do right now. And that's part of the reason we're in the problem we're in, is everybody has excuses not to try something new or different. But I think people could put their heads together and make a significant change that way. I'll leave it at that.
All right. I don't think I asked Frank. Frank, do you have any discussion items you want to talk about?
Well, the items that are important is the president is over in the Philippines talking to a guy that's probably going to be put on trial someday for killing extrajudicial killing of his people that are involved with drugs or purportedly involved with drugs. That was one issue. And we're wondering whether he's going to come out and talk about the human rights aspect of that, the current president of the United States. The president speaking about Putin's sincerity and that they didn't sabotage our election. You know how unbelievable that particular statement was. He's made two statements. The second statement was that he does believe the intelligence agencies but he didn't retract his belief in Putin. And the last two things have to do with Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands and the 100,000 people having to leave those places to come to the United States to reside because the infrastructure there won't support them.
Well, all right. There was a lot of comments made by our president that were on his trip out there and with a lot of concerns. I would say there's some good parts to it because my understanding is there was a big deal made with China, a $450 billion deal or something that would profit the United States. And I hope that will work for us well. We only have like 5 minutes left in the show, but there's something I want to bring up because I thought it was important. Just recently, last week, somebody called the police department and complained in the apartment complex that there were some people doing something crazy. So they sent 3 or 4 cars to this apartment complex. And it was early in the morning when kids are getting ready to go to school. And as the police are going through the apartment complex, they come across a 3-year-old kid on a balcony with a toy gun. So the police officers pull their guns, and one of them is about to shoot the 3-year-old kid because it looks like a real gun. When they look at it, when you see it, it's one of those black guns that looks fairly well. But he said he felt that the kid was might going to shoot. So the reason I'm bringing this up is this is a time when parents are buying kids Christmas presents. As dads, we need to think about that. We need to think about things in our kids' hands that will put their lives in danger. The only reason this young man is still alive today is that the mother walked out and screamed when she saw the police pointing guns at her 3-year-old child with a toy gun. If that wouldn't have happened, that might not have been a good situation. So I know that some of us said that having guns for kids is, no big deal, but some of us said that it is a big deal. I think that brought to light for me that we should, and I was looking at the guns in toy stores now, they're making them look very real. To give a child one of those guns for a Christmas present, I think is just a big mistake. I think we as dads need to think about that, and we should put that message out. What do you think, John? I know you don't have children, but what do you think about that scenario?
It sounds like a 3-year-old's a player. No, I mean, I always thought that, or I was always told or heard that the toy guns that came out of the toy stores had to have the orange, the tip of the barrel had to be orange to warn that it was a plastic gun. So if that part was missing or if the cops missed it, shame on them.
Well, when they showed the gun, it didn't have the orange thing in it. And the issue was this little boy loved guns. So he had four, like maybe 10 guns, and they were all on the balcony. He would go out there every morning and play before he went to nursery school or wherever, play with his guns. That was not good. What do you think about that, Bruce?
Well, it's another example of heightened fear and sense, oversensitivity on this issue. I think that I don't think we should eliminate toy guns. I agree that they're way too some of them are way too realistic, and they don't have to be realistic looking like that. But maybe we need to start somehow, if not mandating, teaching our youngsters earlier on, if they have an interest in guns, proper gun handling and safety, so that that the toy guns are indeed easy to know as toy, and the youngsters learning how to properly use a firearm are properly trained.
That has nothing to do with standing on your balcony at 3 years old with a gun in your hand. with a toy gun in your hand, the police are looking for somebody.
The fact that the police even pointed a gun at him sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? Sounds crazy.
It does, but you look at both sides. The officer saying he felt for his life because there's a kid with a gun out there, and I don't know if the kid was pointing his little toy gun at him. Yeah.
My point is, if that had happened 15, 20 years ago and the little kid was up there going bang, bang, bang at the police, they would have laughed at him. It's not funny
anymore.
Not
the day's time,
though. That's right. That was my whole point. The whole situation has changed now.
Well, I just want to put out there for men who are out there looking at toys for their kids, think about where you live and what kind of toys they're buying. Children, and they're all these games now are games to kill and shoot, so we need to think about that as men. But we'd like to say also thank you for listening to us. We'll be back again next Sunday at 6 o'clock, and I want to say thank you to the panelists and talk to you guys again next week.
Take care, guys.
Thank you, veterans.
Yeah.